The following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Welcome to the official Infernal Legion podcast. I'm your host, Reverend Jeff Bowling, commander of the Infernal Legion, and this is a special Sinister Scuttlebutt episode for the month of May 2024. Listen, folks, I have some bad news for you. Unfortunately, our lovable teddy bear, normal co-host, Dwayne Burns, had yet another tragic masturbation accident. He's going to be, you know, out of the playing field for a little while.
From what I saw in the video, Jeff, I mean, he was beating that thing like it owed him money.
But of course, the show must go on, and you heard his voice already. You folks are already familiar with him. Joining me as my co-host this time is Warlock Rick Kohlmeyer, the Vice Commander of the Infernal Legion. Rick, how the hell are you, brother?
Tired, just getting off work. Been an interesting week. You know, 16 years sober, 6 years with the church. 1 year ago, my dad died. Just kind of been one of those interesting up and down fun weeks.
Congratulations on most of that.
Yeah, don't worry about
it. Happy all around.
As I say, it's like every day I turn around, I can't seem to miss. There's something popping up.
Yeah, it's been a weird year so far, for sure.
Definitely,
joining the two of us in the third chair is the returning citizen Kimberly Campos. Kim, how the hell are you? Welcome back
What's
to the show.
Happy? Thanks for having me. Things are good. I'm tired, you know, moving and all the things, but I'm here. And I'm awake, sort of.
I think we're all on the we're awake sort of.
Exactly. We're here, physically, and our voices are here, but that doesn't mean a whole lot.
Well, both of you, thank you for joining me. Let's talk about May for a moment. May is a very important month for the military because it is Military Appreciation Month. So there's so much stuff going on for the military in the middle of May. But before we get into military stuff, I'd be remiss not to say Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Even though this is a few days late, we appreciate you for, you know, giving birth to us. It means a lot.
You're welcome.
Muchas gracias.
Later on in the month, in fact, coming up this Saturday, the 18th, is Armed Forces Day, where we honor and celebrate all those currently serving in the Armed Forces of the United States, including more than a handful of Legionnaires who are still on active duty in the reserves and on National Guard. So make sure you follow the Infernal Legion on social media for a little shout out to them. And then to close off the month, of course, we have Memorial Day. And as is tradition here in the Infernal Legion, we will have a very special episode with extra guests and the list of the fallen and all the stuff that you've come to expect from the official Infernal Legion podcast. Are you guys doing anything special for any of these days? Did you at least call your mothers?
Well, of course I told Mom Happy Mother's Day.
Sadly, all of my moms have passed, sadly. But, you know, I said Happy Mother's Day to myself and to all of my friends who are moms. So that's all that matters now, you know.
That's
gotta
true.
Keep it moving.
That's true.
And Happy Mother's Day to you and all the moms out there.
Thanks.
Well, let's get into it, shall we? Let's talk about this story. Now, you actually sent me this story, Rick. You sent me this story a couple months ago now, back in March, and we're just now getting around to it. But it's such a cool story that I definitely wanted to cover it. And that is, this article comes from NPR. I know, not military.com. No, it's NPR. The headline is, after decades of secrecy, the Ghost Army is honored for saving U.S. lives in World War II. Members of the so-called Ghost Army used inflatable tanks, phony uniforms, fake rumors, and special effects to deceive German forces during World War II, diverting attention from larger units and saving hundreds of thousands of American lives in the process. But their contributions remained classified for decades, with many veterans taking the secret to their graves. On Thursday, after many years of lobbying, they finally got public recognition in the form of a Congressional Gold Medal, the highest honor the legislative body bestows. Three Ghost Army veterans came to the U.S. Capitol to accept the award, surrounded by military and congressional leaders, lawmakers from both parties, and relatives of Ghost Army members. Quote, it has been 80 years since the Ghost Army landed in France, 19 years since I came to the story, 9 years that I've been working on the gold medal, said Rick Beyer, president of the nonprofit Ghost Army Legacy Project. This is a day that has been a long time coming, but it has been well worth the wait. The award specifically honors the 23rd Headquarters Special Troops, which carried out more than 20 deception missions near the front lines in France, Belgium, Luxembourg, and Germany during June 1944 and March 1945. As well as its sister unit, the 3133 Signal Company Special, which practiced sonic deception in Italy in 1945. The Ghost Army was made up of more than 1,000 troops, though could simulate two units totaling some 30,000 service members, according to the National World War II Museum. There are only 7 surviving members scattered across the country from Florida to Michigan to New Jersey remaining. What a cool fucking job.
When I read that story, I had to send it to you because I was just I love when stuff like that actually gets to come to light, you know, and the guys who had to do the rough raw dog shit finally get the recognition that they deserve.
Yeah,
for pulling off the top secret missions and all that shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when I did a little research on the Ghost Army in preparation for this, and they're very much the kind of, I guess you could say, the precursors to psychological operations. They were doing a lot of that kind of misdirection of the enemy stuff, but modern warfare is so different from what World War II and World War I was like. The fact that they were out there building and creating and crafting and setting up fake armies, like entire fake units with, like they said, inflatable tanks and stuff, that is insane. And it worked. It worked. Yeah.
Well, didn't I send you the article, or did we discuss it about how Germany tried to make a fake wooden city, and I believe it was Captain Britain dropped a wooden bomb on it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, so everybody tried deception, but yeah, the fact that our particular army did so well with it and how many lives that they saved, you know, it's about time they got the recognition they deserved. And it was really cool that the three vet that were, 3 of the 7 that were still alive were able to go there and get that.
Yeah.
It's a shame so many of them got awarded posthumously, but.
It is, but at least their family members could be there. That's something.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's crazy to me to think about. So there's a couple things that go, obviously we still use deception on the battlefield every day. I mean, it's a principle that goes as far back as Sun Tzu.
I mean, but, just your uniforms alone, deception. Camouflage.
Right, yeah, they're camouflage. Which has always been weird to me that you, so for those listening who don't remember, I am surrounded by squids. I've got two Navy vets.
We had sea cams.
We did, and then you couldn't see us in the water when we
fell. Yeah, they're blue. You'd fall into the ocean and disappear.
They were the coolest looking cams that there are.
I feel like the Navy might want to stand out more than the other branches.
Absolutely.
You know, unless you're on the ground.
Absolutely. If we're going to go overboard and like, oh, look, it's water. Great. And,
yeah, our dungarees match the water. Everything
exactly.
Matches the water. Yeah.
Every single thing we've had matches the water. It's unreal.
Like Seaman Taylor went overboard. Oh, fuck him.
Yeah. Right. Keep going. We ain't never gonna find
him. If he survived falling off that carrier, he's done anyway.
Right. But yeah, we still use deception on the battlefield today, but such a different concept of deception. You know, like the kind of long-time listeners of the show know that I spent a little bit of time attached to a PSYOP unit, and some of the stuff we would do is like insert messages into the prayer call or pass out newspapers and leaflets and stuff like that. It was not setting up entire fake armies. And so it speaks to, like I mentioned, the difference in warfare, but also the expectation of the enemy. Like you mentioned that wooden city that the Germans built, and the British responded by dropping a wooden bomb on it. That's kind of a tongue-in-cheek little joke, right?
Yeah.
There was, even with the Allied forces and the Axis powers, there was this understanding of respect. Like you're meeting on the battlefield, you're essentially playing chess. I think that's gone today as well. I don't think that type of mentality exists on the battlefield.
Oh, yeah, you're going back to the days of, you know, trading volleys and stuff. I mean, that's the type of warfare you're talking, which, I mean,
right.
That's gone. You know, yeah, that was back when it was one move at a time. Okay, they fired, now we fire, and, you know.
Right. and to an extent, World War II kept some of that, because, I mean, it was definitely the birthplace of modern warfare, but it was...
Oh, that was... was one of the last trench warfares, too. I mean, yeah. Of course, Nam and Korea had some of that. But, I mean, World War II was on a much larger scale.
And so the fact that they could have those little jokes with their enemy, that they could respect one another. I don't know what Seer School was like back in World War II. But I know that it's pretty much a given today. They're telling you, like, hey, if you get captured, you're going to get fucked up. Oh, yeah. You're going to get tortured. You might get beheaded on camera. You might, you know, like, yeah. All this is what's happening. Back then, like, obviously, no one wants to be a POW. But there was still respect. They weren't just going to, you know, push bamboo shoots up your fingernails and capture you. Yeah.
They're going to keep asking you questions. You got to give name, rank, and, you know.
Right. And they would respect your rank. They would treat you according to your rank as a prisoner, which is phenomenal. It's just such a wildly different type of warfare. And it made things like this possible. It made things like fake units and wooden cities and wooden bombs possible.
Yeah, that would never happen nowadays.
The fact that these guys did all this and built these fake armies and blow up tanks, you know, that take a lot of manpower.
Oh, yeah. And special skills that they don't, like, one of the things it says later on in the article is that a lot of these guys came out of handyman trades. They came out, they were carpenters, they were plumbers, they were the machinists, you know.
Right.
And they were hired to do this. So imagine that. I'm guessing, based on the way the war went, you're a carpenter. And you get conscripted into the army, shoved through a quick version of basic training, sent to Belgium or Germany or Luxembourg or France, and then told to build a fake tank on the battlefield while bombs
right.
I mean, balls of steel on these guys.
Absolutely. And I forget, being like decoy, you know, like, hey, come over here, shoot us. That's huge.
I forget, does the article list, like, any rate rank? Did it say, you know, say, like, if they were at the Army Corps, if they were CBs or what?
It was an Army unit, so I'm guessing they were considered Army. So, yeah, I don't see any rank listed or anything like that. It's probably still classified.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, there was the three people there that in the article, so I'm sure their names are somewhere. No, that, I mean, I just, when I read that, I thought that was cool as hell. And I thought it was kind of a good story, and we've had so many bad ones this year.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And we still got more coming.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it's just absolutely fascinating. And I would love to sit down with one of these guys and just hear their stories.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so incredible.
I would love to listen. I'd record it because I'd want to hear it again, because those are stories you'd pick something out of each time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, listen to somebody like that and the stuff that they went through. And I mean, it was a whole different time, whole different type, like you said, a whole different type of warfare. That was back when you still had to have the guy back there in the plane looking down through the lenses trying to line everything up before they dropped the bombs and stuff.
Right, yeah, right. Now everything's done with computers.
And now it's computer laser guided. It's like, if we want to hit that left pubic hair right over there on your right testicle, we're going to hit it.
And if we blow up everything in the surrounding area, it never happened.
Never happened.
Weren't there.
This episode is brought to you by Duffel Blog. Read in the Pentagon and around the world, since 2012, Duffel Blog has been the most trusted news source for the American military. Duffel Blog is the first and only satire newsletter devoted to the United States military community. Visit duffelblog.com for more information.
All right, so let's move on to I don't know how to describe this, maybe why the hell weren't they doing this all along article? This one comes from the Army Times. Army adds cognitive test to track new soldier brain health. The Army will begin conducting a cognitive assessment for a baseline measurement of brain health to measure the effects of any future trauma for all new soldiers at basic training and cadets before they are commissioned. Secretary of the Army Christine Wormuth referenced the new program, which will begin in June during budget testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee on Thursday. Senator Angus King, independent of Maine, asked Wormuth what the service was doing to measure soldiers' brain health following exposures to blasts, specifically citing the case of Sergeant First Class Robert Card, an Army reservist who killed 18 people in a mass shooting in Lewiston, Maine, back in October. Card served as an instructor at an Army hand grenade training range. An autopsy of his brain showed evidence of traumatic brain injury, an injury linked with concussions and blast explosion. We had a tragedy here in Lewiston, Maine last year, and it turns out the fellow was a munitions test instructor. He experienced blast after blast after blast, King said. Analysis of his brain indicated it was severely damaged. Wormuth told the senator that the Army would begin cognitive assessments of all new soldiers entering basic training in June. Lieutenant Colonel Randy Reddy, a spokesman for the Army's Center for Initial Military Training, told Army Times the service will use the automated neuropsychological assessment metrics tool. All new soldiers going through basic training or one unit station training, that is in the wrong order, it's one station unit training, will take the ANAM, Reddy wrote in an email response. The ANAM assessment tool has been used on soldiers to measure pre- and post-deployment cognitive functions since 2008. Now, I deployed and redeployed in 2008, and I never took this test, so I don't know what they're talking
about. So I can say this, right? I was talking to Tony, who's actually texting me, and I'm like, we're about to start your thing, because he's done this, and he does it every year. So he's like, if you guys want to call me, I'll say my piece, and I'm like, I'll call you on the phone and just be like, here you go, listen. So if you guys are interested in that, he's definitely down to do it. But yeah, he's got firsthand experience with this because, I mean, obviously it's a Green Beret. He's been blown up a billion times.
Right.
So knowing the fact that he's actually done this, which I had never heard of it either.
Interesting. All right, let me stop recording real quick.
This episode is brought to you by the Warlock Emporium. The Warlock Emporium is creating bespoke items for the chosen few. The Warlock Emporium is the only authorized seller of items bearing the Warlock Sigil, created by Magister Dr. Robert Johnson, author of The Satanic Warlock. The Warlock Emporium is now offering a 15% military discount. Visit thewarlockemporium.com for more information.
Apologies for the delay there, folks. We have a very special guest joining us right now. We woke him up. He's on vacation right now. He was probably dreaming about his windsurfing and having a Mai Tai later on. But we had to get him in here because we're talking about this ANAM test that the Army is trying to implement across the board. And apparently, he takes this test all the time. So, Tony, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. So what can you tell me about this test? It says that it started in 2008, but I deployed and redeployed in 2008 and never saw it, never heard of it till now. What's it all about? What does it do?
It's a test that's on, we take it on a computer, and it just tests memory and I guess cognitive brain function and everything like that. I mean, I'm not a neurologist or anything like that.
Right.
You know, I sit down and I take this thing and you know, it challenges my memory.
So, yeah, they were saying in the article that it's like they'll show like an image for a few seconds and then show a couple different images and you have to pick whichever one is closest.
Yeah. You know, that's one side by side. Some of it's like a, I would call it like coding or patterns. You know, they'll give you shapes matched to numbers and then, you know, try to, you know, they show you the scale and then they take it away and they have you sit there for a few seconds and then you have to throw the shape back up and you have to remember the number. You know, it's a group of tests. The last time I took it, it's like a 20, 30 minute thing. It's between that. There's a lot of like click the dot when you click this, when you see that and things like that, just to test.
Okay.
I think like motor function and like brain.
Right.
Motor function stuff. I mean, like I said, I'm not a professional, and I just know I take it, and every year I just kind of joke about it. It's like, well, I'm taking this again to establish my baseline again. All right, let's see how much worse I've gotten over the like
right. year. You know? Well, and no, and that's an interesting question because it's supposed to track trauma, damage to the brain. Do they ever tell you what your results are, or do they just kind of keep it for their notes?
I think they no. I never really know what my results are.
That's interesting.
I imagine it just goes into and I'm trying to think if I've ever, because I've never failed it. I'm trying to think if I've ever, or I don't think I've ever failed it. I don't remember failing it.
Is it like a pass or fail thing?
It's a joke. Not necessarily. I think that. Well, man.
I mean, maybe it's not. It's not a black or. It's not a black or white thing.
That was sneaky. I appreciated that.
Yeah. Welcome to Tony.
Sorry, Rick. You were saying.
No, you're good. I was saying to answer a question, it's not like really a black or white pass or fail type of test. I have to take this type of test myself annually, not for the same reasons as Tony, but I had a severe traumatic brain injury 3.5 years ago. So they do it to monitor my cognitive skills. And like he was saying, they'll show me 50 different images, and then after that they'll show me two images up there, and I have to see which one I've seen before, and then a series of numbers and repeat it back, or I have to do a series of numbers and repeat it back backwards. And you know, all it does is, and it measures, like you're saying, your ability, your short-term memory, as well as, you know, as some of the testing works on your longer-term memory and stuff like that, and kind of gives them a baseline of where you are.
And so since they tell you if you have gotten worse or better, or if there's any changes?
Yeah, they talk to me, but like I said, I am a severe TBI survivor.
Right.
So
they're
right now. So
yeah, and I have permanent left frontal lobe damage, mm-hmm. Damage to the hypothalamus, and a few other areas of the brain. So yeah, they obviously let me know, you know, any changes right. going on, and that, you know, I have to get my MRIs so that they can look and see what's going on with the damaged areas and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's definitely something important that should be implemented, especially with, you know, people who work in blast areas or anything that's going to be damaging or can concuss the brain.
Yeah. That's why I'm surprised they haven't told you anything, Tony, because that seems like it's super important to know, you know?
It is. I think it's one of those things that they're tracking and monitoring. I don't know this for sure. Sometimes I assume that, you know, over the past 20 years, we've learned a lot about stopping tracking this stuff. I remember, you know, in 2003, you know, none of this stuff existed. And especially in certain career fields that, you know, are exposed to blast more. I think you're just trying to find a better way of tracking and maintaining a history. I think the article, and you have to excuse me, because I breezed the article real quick, and I saw it was
right,
about the AAM, because Tim sent it to me. He's like, hey, what do you think about this? I'm like, oh, yeah, I take this every year. You know, it's like one of those things, like when the flu shot comes up, it's like, I'll go get your flu shot. I'm like,
okay, right, and you probably don't even think about it.
yeah, it's like, hey, you need to go get your AAM. You're like, oh, crap, okay, here we go. You know, it's just a way, which maybe it's a good thing. It just takes time out of the day. You know, that's kind of what it is. And there's usually a lot of people that are taking it at the same time. But, yeah, it's just a tool to track it, I think, as whenever something does happen, they can go back and look at it and have the record to say, wow, it looks, you're here, and now you're, you know.
Yeah, I can show them immediate red flags.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
and the VA is going to appreciate it when you get out or when you retire and have to file for compensation. The VA will appreciate those records, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big time.
You'll find out how fucked up you really were.
You mean his lawyer defending him to the VA?
Right.
appreciate those files.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm not even. That's not too far away for me. So.
So this is spent. What they're trying to do here is implement it before basic training, Army wide. So every new recruit will go in and, I guess, get a baseline done, which, again, when I started the article, I said, like, this is why the fuck haven't we done this till now? Like, especially with this last war, so many TBI cases, so many soldiers suffering from seizures and PTSD and stuff, all related directly to the TBI. It does make me wonder, and now that I've got two sailors here, why aren't they doing this with the other branches? It's not like you guys don't experience knocks to the head on a ship or, you know, in boot camp or something like that?
It's hard to say. I mean, I would imagine probably because the majority of our stuff, the bangs and the stuff that we deal with, is launching the rockets off the side of the ship.
Yep.
I mean, most of our warfare is fought at a distance where, you know, the Army and the Marines, you know, they're more up close and they're in the trenches. I mean, you guys shoot from 30 yards. We shoot from, you know, 300 miles.
Right. And I wonder if they do this, you know, with like the Seabees or the corpsmen that are field corpsmen with the Marine Corps and stuff. I wonder, and the SEALs, if they do something similar, maybe not the exact same thing. But actually, you may know this because you have worked with other Special Forces people, right?
Me? Yeah. Yeah, with other soft elements, yeah.
Do you know if the SEALs take anything like this, or
you know, like
BJs or
question? That's a good question. I would imagine yes, but I maybe I have access to answer that question, to ask that question here sometime soon. But I assume, just because it's a soft element. So
I would definitely think so with them. I mean, they would. I would think they would have to definitely have the cognitive, psychological, and you know, quite a bit of different testing with what they have to go through.
Any
of the special forces.
I'm sure the Marines don't do it because they take Embrace the Suck to a whole new level.
They just want their crayons.
The baseline is, oh, he's already broken. Perfect.
Does he respond when I bark? He works.
Places the lotion on the skin.
I also have to say, so not only is it weird that they're just now, especially since they've been doing this apparently with elements for so long, that they're just now introducing it army wide, but it's also weird that it's taken this long in terms of history in general to get to the point where we're honestly considering brain damage amongst service members. We've all heard the shell shock and Gulf War syndrome and all those terms for decades and more than a century. We've known that that's an issue, and we're just now getting around to testing for it. That seems fucking weird to me.
Hey, well, you know, the whole world, look at sports, football, baseball, hockey. I mean, everything, military, we're just now as a race going, you know what? We need to protect that thing that's inside of our fucking skull because that's what makes us who we are and runs everything, you know? And then it's like, as I've learned working with neurologists and stuff since my TBI, it's like, we need to protect this thing because we don't even understand 1%
of
our brain.
Yeah. We still don't know how it works. And that's weird too.
I mean, a neurologist told me, he's like, we do not even understand 1% of the brain. And I'm like, and you guys want to go poking around in there, huh?
it's fascinating stuff. And I'm glad. I'm glad that new soldiers coming in are going to get this test. I do hope that they take it out service-wide and sailors and airmen and Marines, at least for the ones who are most likely to get this stuff. But really, I mean, why not do it for everybody? You never know when you're going to fall off the back of a 5-ton or wake up too fast in your rack and bounce your head off the top.
I got hit in the head with my rack. It fell on me. So, you know, things like that happen all the time. They're not very sturdy. So
your rack fell on you?
It did, yeah. So, Rick will know. Like, you hold the rack up, and then you have, like, this little, kind of like the hood of a car.
Gotcha. You know? Okay.
And so that stick broke and it fell on my head, which is great. Great for me.
Sounds like you need to take the ANAM.
I do. And you know, and the crazy thing is that, you know, when I go to the VA, they're like, have you had you know, any blunt force trauma to your head? And I'm like, actually, yes. And then they look at you like you're stupid. Like, how? You're in the Navy. Yeah. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
And then I say that, and they're like, psh, that's nothing. I'm like, I was stars. And like, you know, like, I'm sure it was nothing. So, yeah, I feel like, you know, it doesn't matter the branch. You can be exposed to trauma in various ways, whether people think it or not, you know?
Right. Just the structure of the military.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how Space Force or Coast Guard could hurt themselves, but, you know.
What were you saying?
I think it's a good – I think everyone should have access to it whenever something like that does happen. For sure, it should be implemented. I guess I kind of see the logic. I definitely think, like, everyone coming in, I think that's a great idea. Just to kind of establish that, especially, like, the – I mean, I'm coming from an Army perspective, but especially, you know, your combat arms guys, like your infantrymen or, you know, anyone that blowing things up or hanging rounds over a mortar tube, you know, and that's stuff that affects you. You know, I remember for a while we never used them because we were just like, this is dumb because we were younger dudes, but they started issuing blast sensors whenever people deploy. You know, you're supposed to put them on your helmet and your
and nobody ever. Arm. ever did.
Some people did. Some people, I had seen them, like, look at you, you know.
They also gave us all earplugs, and apparently those just fucked up our ears.
I remember the M3 earplugs. I see those advertisements all the time. I'm like,
yeah, I see those lawyers constantly. Yep. Did you wear these earplugs? Did you do this?
You could be entitled to compensation.
Have you seen the new ones? Did you go to boot camp in Great Lakes? Were you near the firefighting foam? And I'm like, yes, yes.
Sure was.
So what do I get to get, a $15 check?
Yeah, and to top it off, you all drank the water in Camp Lejeune, so you're just screwed.
That's one thing I didn't do.
I have not been to Camp Lejeune. Do not want to go drink at Camp Lejeune.
Yeah, apparently avoid the water while you're there, for sure. It's fascinating. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what it looks like. I have a feeling, and either way, they're not going to be very straightforward about what's happening. But my back of my head is telling me that 90% of soldiers are going to be getting out of the Army in 4 to 8 years, and they're all going to have some type of brain injury. Because it's just messing around while you're in the motor pool. The first time I learned how turtles fucked was just messing around in the motor pool and getting slammed on the back of the head with another guy's Kevlar. And that was for fun. So I have a distinct feeling we're going to see a lot, like a growing, the numbers are going to shoot through the roof of people with brain injuries just from serving.
Say, hell, all you got to do is think about boot camp after you did that 1,000 sit up and you just freaking let your head fall backward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you just relax.
Yeah. And you knock yourself out.
and there's also the guys who, the paratroopers, who, you know, if you don't tuck your chin, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
I've hit my head quite a few times.
I don't think jobs, I've ever landed gracefully or like the diagram ever. On the show.
Yeah, especially not now. No, you know, it has its moments for sure.
You know, hey, thanks for coming on and sharing your perspective, Tony. Do you want to stick around for our last story?
Yeah, sure. I'm not sure what it is, but I don't mind. If you guys don't mind having me, I'll stick around.
No, not at all. Sure. All right, everyone listening, stay tuned right here on Radio Free Satan for the rest of the official Infernal Legion podcast, right after this commercial break and the latest episode of The Tower from Magister Adam Campbell, where he's going to be discussing conscientious objectors.
Welcome to the Metro. Your host, Reverend Jeff Ivins, brings you a weekly time trip back to the 1980s. With songs from the decade of decadence, only on Radio Free Satan. Hail Satan. I'm tired of listening to you talking around, twisting around to make me think you're straight down the line. How you doing,
man? Well, man, it is now official.
The Shit Kicking Road Show, the finest in rockabilly, psychobilly, vintage country, swamp rock, surf rock, doo-wop, this potpourri of madness. The Shit Kicking Road Show, Radio Free, goddamn Satan. I'm Clint Mephisto, coming at you from the Double Cross Ranch. Booze in one hand, microphone on the other, swamp thing on the telly, and the good tunes in front of me here at the computer. The Shit Kicking Road Show, Radio Free, Satan.
Damn! You will excuse me, won't you? Well, thank you very much.
Why start your mornings early when you can sleep in late and wake up later to a freshly brewed cup of Radio Free Satan? Radio Free Satan is infernally roasted, with a complex taste to suit your indulgence. It's sinful, that's why it tastes great. So pour yourself another helping of this podcast and others at RadioFreeSatan.com.
Soldiers. While we're out here, you will be taking all commands from the tower. And I am the tower! Do you understand?
Yes, Sergeant!
Welcome to the tower, your dose of military news delivered with an infernal edge. My name is Magister Campbell, and today we are discussing a conscientious objector who is risking jail time. Thai conscientious objector risks jail in rare refusal of military service. This is from The Guardian by Rebecca Ratcliffe, Sunday, 21st April 2024. Young men are forced to take part in conscript lottery, but the rich often avoid serving in the army. Every April in Thailand, young men take part in a lottery to determine whether they will be forced to do military service. Pull out a red card and you're drafted for up to 2 years. A black card means you are exempt. When it was Nedawit Chodafet Faisal's turn to draw a card this month, he refused, making a rare protest as a conscientious objector. If prosecuted, it is believed he could become the first person in Thailand to be imprisoned for avoiding the draft through civil disobedience. The offense carries a maximum sentence of 3 years. Quote, I am very anxious. When I'm sleeping, I'm thinking about whether I have to go to jail. I observe a lot of things. I already have a business now. I will lose everything. Nedawit, 27, told The Observer. But he added, I think someone has to do this, to show that we have a problem. Nedawit said the system was outdated, ineffective, and unfairly affected the poorest, who were less well-placed to find ways to avoid the draft. It was also, he said, part of a wider system that undermined the country's democracy. The prominent activist first announced his objection to military service as a teenager after the military seized power in a coup in 2014. It was only last year that the former coup leader, Prayuth Chan-o-cha, had later become prime minister, left office after his party suffered a humiliating electoral defeat. Military service brainwashes people, Nedawit said. I think the military service is one thing that holds our country to be ruled by the military. Move Forward, a youthful pro-reform party, won most votes in last year's election, but was blocked from power by military-appointed senators, and so a coalition was formed between Pho Thai, the party of ex-leader Thaksin Shinawatra, and its former enemies in pro-military parties. The concept of being a conscientious objector is relatively new in Thailand, according to Panawat Panduprasarat, a political science professor at Chiang Mai University. This is partly because older generations were less likely to perceive the obligation as a violation of their rights, or to want to risk protesting against the military, he said. There are also many ways, legal and illegal, for people to avoid military service, provided they have the resources. One of the most common options is to take a military training course for 1 day a week during secondary school. This option is not available to all students, however. Students have to have a qualifying exam, said Panawat. In practice, it turns out the system is biased towards students from prestigious schools. People can also be exempt on military grounds, or if they become a monk of a certain rank. Others use illegal means, such as bribery. The system was stacked against the poorest, said Nedawit, with those who were forced to serve losing jobs or career opportunities. Past research by Amnesty International found evidence that new conscripts face violence, humiliation, and sexual assault, with LGBT conscripts particularly vulnerable. High-profile deaths in training camps have also raised questions about their treatment. Last year, 8 military personnel were jailed for wrongful exercise of duties and negligence after the torture and killing of a conscript in 2011. Defense Minister Su Tin Klungsang said that these incidents are rare. Such cases have, however, added to pressure of reform. Last month, the hashtag End Mandatory Conscription went viral on social media after a Move Forward MP, Tisun Chunhaven, called on the army to investigate the suicide of a conscript who had previously worked as her assistant. Before his death, he had told her that he was stressed and had been ordered to sweep the floors and mow the lawn of his commander's house. The army denied there was a connection between his death and treatment as a conscript. Later, a naval conscript posted a widely shared video about how he had been ordered to do household chores for his officer, including washing underwear, cleaning the dishes, and clearing away bottles of alcohol. In the past, people were less likely to openly criticize the military, said Nedawit. People didn't dare to talk like this in public because they think they will be in trouble. Today, the situation has changed, he added, referring to youth-led mass protests in 2020 that not only called for reform from the military, but also broke a deeply ingrained taboo and criticized the monarchy. All right, here's my thoughts. There's a lot in this. A lot of this is going to be, of course, we're in the U.S. and this is in Thailand, so it's not apples to apples. But conceptually, there are some points I want to bring up that I found interesting. My soldier, when I was serving in the U.S. Army, was a conscientious objector serving in the military. Conscientious objecting typically means they don't want to go to combat because they're, you know, they just can't bring the idea of killing another human for any reason. It just goes against their personal morals or their own conscience. And so that's why most people refuse to either, if they are set to be deployed, if they're actively in the military service, why they declare themselves as a conscientious objector. But in some cases, it's just they didn't want to do military service in the first place. They just object to the concept of it. Now, this is going to lead into a broader understanding of the way I think the world should work, which, you know, who cares what I think. But I think, honestly, there are countries around the world that do this properly. Now, pressing military service, the reality is it's not for everyone. I mean, in our country, we don't have a draft. And what it does is it provides people who want to serve, who want that opportunity to go in and enjoy the benefits of service, and the skills they learn as a soldier benefit them greatly in their wider life. But yes, there are abuses and there are issues that need to be addressed. That's typically only done from the inside, however, because from the outside, you have no authority, you have no control. The military governs itself. So you have to have people on the inside working for these reforms, because there are going to be assholes like these commanders making them do household chores, washing their underwear and stuff, if there's no oversight or if there's no transparency through service. But I still think service to one's country is important. Not so you can be brainwashed. This whole idea that the military brainwashes people is so absurd. Yes, you learn skills, you get a broader viewpoint of the world, which will change you, but that's not brainwashing. I remember when my son signed up for the Marines, everyone was so afraid, oh, the Marines, they brainwash you more than any other service, and he's not going to be the same person. No, he's the exact same person. He just went through a different training than other military service members did. It didn't brainwash him into becoming some sort of automaton or robot. He just sees the world in a slightly different way because he went through something that most people don't. And that's the exact same thing with this individual, Nedowit, and in his country. Because he's on the outside, he thinks the military is one thing, but it is usually not. And yes, you do have those sort of one-off abuses and horrible situations that get dealt with ultimately, as is noted in this article. But those are rare, and you get more out of military service, especially depending on what you put into it, based on your perception going in, how you decide to act while you're in, the opportunities that you seize on. You can actually do really, really well for yourself. And that doesn't mean you have to be a lifelong soldier. 2 years is nothing. It's literally nothing. 2 years of your life as a grown-up flies by in the blink of an eye. And the benefits that you get and your country get from having a mandatory service is invaluable. Not only does it give an educated citizen base who understand what it means to serve, that broadens everyone's perspective, and it encourages you to then engage with your democracy and your government. And that's a good thing, because in a vacuum, the government will run away with your rights. If you are involved in it, you can protect those rights. And this speaks to a larger conversation. We don't have an active draft. We really don't need to worry about this at all. But opinions change and humans evolve. So if you want to have rights in a country, if you see yourself as a democracy, you have to fight for those rights. How do you think that fighting is done? By the military. This idea that individuals shouldn't have to contribute to the greater society while benefiting from all of the privileges and rights that society provides is asinine to me. You have to step up and you have to give back to what you are taking from this society. Now, this is all the world around, I think this should be 100% mandatory everywhere. Everyone should have to provide some form of a service. It doesn't have to be military. Maybe it's working at a hospital. Maybe it's working at a public library or a post office or something. But you should have to serve the greater community that you exist in, that you're getting benefits from, in order to pay back for those. Now, we do that in the United States in the form of taxes. But we basically say, hey, if you just happen to be born on this piece of earth, you know, swirling through the universe, well, that makes you special. And you get all of these rights simply because you exist in this one little piece of dirt. You gotta earn it. We end up with a country like we have right now, bitterly divided over ridiculous notions of left and right, while both of them are completely controlled by corporate interests. We are the tail wagging the dog. We are fools hopping through flaming hoops in a circus while our government is printing money, stealing our taxes, giving it away to other countries. We are blinded by this simply because we don't have mandatory service, in my opinion. Because most people don't want to be involved. They don't want to care. They don't want to have to do anything for all of the rights that they're enjoying. This Thai citizen has a country where it forces you to pay attention to it. And they're complaining about it. That's the problem. Now, I agree that you shouldn't have to have military service. Most people cannot physically step up to the demands of a rigorous military lifestyle. People are just simply weak. We have to have worker bees in this world. And some people, like Nedowit, are worker bees. They cannot step up and be soldiers. It is not within them to do that. But, again, he's a worker bee. He has his own company. He is contributing to a society in that way. As long as he's paying taxes, you know, maybe 2 years of a different type of service or 2 years of his company serving the greater community at reduced prices, or maybe they have a healthy military discount system, you know, to sort of offset the service. You know, we have to be able to think out of the box instead of just throwing people, you know, on a rifle and saying, hey, go fight for 2 years or go, you know, be a service member for 2 years, when that's just not... Every single one of us humans have completely different chemical makeups. We're all humans. We're all born and generally look pretty similar, but our biology is slightly different. Our chemistry is slightly different. So we can't expect everyone to fit and behave in the same exact way and fit in the same exact mold. We have to be a little bit more malleable. Now, whether you're talking about Thailand or whether you're talking about the United States or anywhere else, we should be using this idea to put people in the correct position. So, for example, going back to the soldier of mine who was a conscientious objector, he was in a support role. And so he wasn't ever going to see battle straight on. Yes, it's possible that he could have been engaged in a firefight, or he could have been, you know, found himself sort of behind enemy lines or something, because we're commo and we had to be separate in order to sort of retransmit communications from one position to another. But that's the role you signed up for. Now, I'm a little bit torn because, yes, we did sign up. We did choose to go into the service. But I also recognize that people's understanding of the world changes. Their experiences that they have change them fundamentally. So the person that signed up with the opportunity or the possibility of facing combat may not be the same person when they're finally, you know, years later sent into combat. Conceptually, it's one thing. In practice, it's a whole thing other entirely. So I do think that we need to re-examine, you know, maybe stop signing up for 5 years for a particular job. Maybe make it the maximum of 2 years. Like, you cannot sign up for more than 2 years at a time, so that you understand and you grow and then you make choices based on that and you're not locked into some crazy contract. But again, 2 years is nothing. So for this individual to just absolutely refuse to even participate in a draft that his government has instituted, and yet still is, you know, wanting to enjoy the rights of owning and running a business without having paid into the society in any other way, well, that's ridiculous. Now, I want to get to my idea here. This is, if I had the power, this is what I would do. I would have a two-class system. If you want to enjoy voting, if you want to enjoy all of the rights of a given society, you must serve that society for 2 years. Now, like I mentioned before, that may be through social programs, that may be through public service. It doesn't have to be through military, but military would be one of the options. After that 2 years, you are a full citizen with full rights. You can vote, you can, you know, engage in government if you want to, or just ignore it altogether. You did your duty. Everyone who doesn't step up, you're a second-class citizen. You don't get the right to vote. You don't get all of the rights that that citizen or that country offers because you chose not to contribute. So why should you have all the rights that someone who did contribute has? That's the world I want to live in. It'll never happen because we have too many pussies in this world who refuse to take responsibility for their own actions, let alone the greater community that they're leeching off of. But I can dream. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about the rich being able to get out of this. Now, this is something that we see in government. We see in our legal systems. If you are of means, if you have wealth, then you get to skirt by a government. And this happens when you have money controlling that government. Now, that's clearly a situation with this draft in Thailand, and it's a serious situation with our legal system, our government. I mean, you know, we have people sort of fist-pumping the air, wanting to go into wars, and yet their children aren't serving. They never served. That is fundamentally a broken system. That means that if you have money, you don't have to obey the law like everyone else. And that degrades a democracy. That's what we're suffering from right now. And so I understand the plight that Thailand is suffering under the same exact situation. But a democracy isn't easy. A democracy is not something that's built overnight. A democracy is something that evolves over time. And sometimes you have to cleanse it. I'm not suggesting that we are in that position at all right now, because I don't think we are, even with as insane as our citizenry is at the moment. But that's the price of a democracy, is constantly reevaluating whether it's working or not and making changes to it when it's not working. And in this particular case with Thailand, this is a wonderful protest. While I don't like his refusal to serve his country, I do like that he is forcing a conversation on a burgeoning democracy. How much influence should the military have in governance? I think that's a very valid question. I think it's something that should be examined, and that's the beauty of a democracy, is that you have your citizens, and everyone has a representative, and everyone gets to contribute conceptually to how that democracy grows. And that's why it's so important to get money out of politics and not allow corporate interests to take over or control representatives through mass donations and other benefits. I mean, we have to fight for this democracy. We, as Americans, as veterans, as active duty soldiers, we have to take an active interest, because serving isn't just enough. We have to then use those rights that we're defending in voting, in using our voice to communicate how we feel about a given situation, a legislation, to our representatives about how we feel the democracy is going. We have to vocalize it in a positive way, in a direct way, so that everyone understands if you dissent, you're not just a far lefter or a far right nut job. No, you're a concerned citizen with valid thoughts that need to be considered, because you served, you participated in the government and democracy. You're owed your voice to be put on a platform. If you don't participate, then you don't get that right. It's very simple. So service to one's country, ultimately, in my opinion, builds perspective and gratitude. And change never happens from the outside in. It has to start from the inside. So if he wants to pull the lottery and he gets a black ticket and he doesn't have to serve for 2 years, awesome, that's great. But you can still use your voice because you participated. By refusing to even participate, to me, That tells me you don't get the choice. You don't get the right. So sit on the sideline and shut the fuck up.
All right, soldiers, that's all I have for you today. Comedy! Attend! Hoot! Holla!
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire and Year One Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us. For we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan, full of might! Our allegiance is with thee! Cursed are they, the God adorers, and cursed are the worshippers of the Nazarene eunuch.
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast, and as always, thank you to Magister Campbell for that enlightening segment of the tower. Well, Tony is still with us. He's decided that he's not going to go back to sleep on his vacation, push his windsurfing date back. We're going to have the Mai Tai together, though, so it's all going to be fine. We're going to talk about. So let's jump into this fucking infuriating story to close out the show here. This article comes from military.com, and it's called Lack of Respect, Army National Guard Criticized by Lawmakers for Bungling Enlistment Bonus Payments. A bipartisan group of House lawmakers is demanding answers from the Army National Guard on its plans to pay delinquent enlistment bonuses to the thousands of soldiers who are owed. In a letter Tuesday to General Daniel Hokanson, the National Guard's top officer, Representatives Ruben Gallego, Mike Waltz, and Trent Kelly questioned how the service component has seemingly bungled how it pays its troops after Military.com reported it is behind on paying about 13,000 soldiers their enlistment bonuses. Most recently, the Army National Guard sent out thousands of letters to former soldiers regarding potentially missed bonuses, asking them to figure out whether they're owed money. The Guard pointed them to a series of bureaucratic and time-consuming hurdles, including gathering service documentation that may be difficult to obtain. So it starts off with, oops, we forgot to pay you. Oh, who needs to be paid? I don't know. Let them fucking figure it out. 13,000 of them. What the fuck?
What the fuck exactly?
I was gonna say, I don't know what you guys in the Army call your personnel men, but it sounds like they need to get their fucking shit together. I'm sorry, as a yeoman, and I knew how to navigate the fucking paperwork in the fucking military, trying to ask other people who don't do that don't have an administrative MOS or rating, they'll never figure out the paperwork. I mean, that trail is a mile long, and it goes a thousand ways. This is stupid as fuck.
And it's not as simple as finding your enlistment contract.
Mm-hmm. No.
And then providing your LESs. No, that would make sense. They can't make it that simple. You have to crawl through MILPER's website and find all these little documents that they want you to hide. And then who knows how long it's going to take to process all those documents if you even track them all down and send them up. And let's say you enlisted and you've since, in the time it takes them to process, you get out. You're no longer in the National Guard. They're not going to go out of their way to track you down.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, and my thought was, like, why if I'm joining any branch, even National Guard, and I know that I'm entitled to $20,000, $15,000, $5,000, whatever it is, I'm going to be damn sure that I'm going to get that money. And if I'm not going to get the money, I'm going to be asking questions. Why have I not gotten my money? So to go through a whole enlistment and not ask those questions, that's the only part of this that's a little infuriating. Yeah. You know, I mean, all of it's infuriating, but more so, like, if you wanted that money, why didn't you go after it? And if you did, why isn't that being
addressed as well? Article, yeah.
You know?
It may be because it's National Guard. And so it's a little – so active – and Tony, you can attest to this. Active duty, you just go to talk to your company XO or talk to your first sergeant or talk to your platoon sergeant. You just talk to – you see him every day. Say, hey, hey, sergeant, I haven't got my enlistment bonus pay. And then they start the process. Mm-hmm. But in the National Guard, you see these people 1 weekend a month. And even then, you're not necessarily seeing the people who can actually do anything about it.
Right.
So maybe that's the issue.
It could be, for sure.
Perhaps. I tend to agree with Kim a little bit on that. But, you know, because people pay attention to money, and it's like whenever you start messing with someone's money. Now, I don't know. I'm not National Guard, so I guess I don't know how they get paid. But I certainly think that there's a breakdown in the system, and a lot of times, you know, in my experience, getting someone to do their job is, well, getting some folks to do those jobs is like they're doing you a favor. I joke around, you know what I mean? You know, sometimes the service member's just ignorant to stuff if you have like a young person, but I definitely think that it sounds, I haven't read the article, so I have to excuse me, but from what I hear here, it sounds like there's just a breakdown in a failure somewhere in there on the administrative side. With record keeping. I mean, it's, I don't know.
there's definitely some kind of breakdown. That's absolutely for sure. And the article doesn't go into specifics of how this necessarily happened, which is also very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems very strange to me. And this is another reason why. And I'm sure, I don't know if you guys got enlistment bonuses, Tony. I'm sure you did. But
I did.
This is why I always told people to ask for all of it up front. Because they give you the two options, kind of like the lottery. They give you the two options of getting your pay in bulk or in getting it spread out over time. And we all know how fucked up military finance is. So anything that you try to spread out over multiple months or years of service is going to get messed up somewhere along the line.
See, and the article also didn't cover the important questions like, you know, how are the strippers outside the posts and bases handling this without the bonuses going out?
They're sweating bullets till the clothing allowance drops.
This episode is brought to you by Underworld Amusements. Since 2007, Underworld Amusements has been creating, producing, publishing, and distributing Curious Sundries and Callous Broadsides. From the Satanic Scriptures by Magus Peter H. Gilmore to Might is Right, the Authoritative Edition by Ragnar Redbeard, Underworld Amusements is your source for the most dangerous books ever written. Visit underworldamusements.com for more information.
But yeah, so this situation, what was extra infuriating about this article is that it appears on the surface that some members of Congress are holding the National Guard's feet to the fire on this. The problem is they never offer a solution. So they're yelling at the commander of the whole National Guard. Why did this mess up? What's going on here? But none of them are providing a way to get it done faster. And what that tells me is that while this makes a news story and you may hear about it on like fucking C-SPAN or something, it's not going to change. They're still going to have to go and process the paperwork themselves through this fucking complicated maze of nonsense. And it's really unfortunate, especially right in the middle of this ridiculous recruiting crisis we're having. I mean, how are you going to get guys to stay in or sign up if the one thing that you're luring them in with, that bonus, you're not even paying them?
Yeah, fucking it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird. Yeah, I don't know how the National Guard's been affected with the recruiting drought that, you know, the other branches are having, but it definitely would be a black eye to anybody looking to maybe go to the Guard to do the small parts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even, you know, now with recruiting, they're letting people in without high school diplomas, without GEDs.
Yeah, I saw that.
Scraping the bottom of the barrel to get
As far as congressional inquiries trying to give solutions, when have they ever given a solution?
Right.
All they ever do.
No, you're right. You're right.
All they do is point out problems and say, somebody do something.
Right. And nothing ever happens. Yeah. Yep.
It's like, thanks, Congress. You're great.
And I think we all know how little higher up officers know about the nuts and bolts of what's happening. So I'm sure that this general got a folder with some basic intel over what he was about to step into. And then they yelled in, but he doesn't know what the hell's going on. This is probably the first he's hearing of it.
Yep.
If you're out there and you're in the National Guard and you haven't been paid your enlistment bonus, start working on the paperwork. And if you're in the Infernal Legion, hit us up. Let us know. Our VSO, who, again, suffered a tragic masturbation accident, will go over the paperwork and try to help you as best he can. He retired from the National Guard, so he knows.
He was beating that motherfucker. I mean, I seriously thought he was beating somebody's ass.
punching that clown, huh? Gah,
gah, gah. Like, he's like,
I'm so mad at you, Ray.
Holy shit.
Oh, poor Jane.
Yeah. All right, guys, anything else to add to this?
Get your money.
Kim, Ray, thank you guys so much for filling in for Dwayne. Tony, thanks for taking time out of your vacation to ring in and give us your perspective on this.
It was great talking to you guys.
Thanks for having me.
For those of you listening, we'll be back with our very special Memorial Day episode. We'll have a handful of guests and some other special goodies. And, of course, we'll be reading the names of the fallen and honoring their memories. So until we can do this again, everyone, once again, thank you for joining. Everyone out there, thank you for listening. And hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
There is a new veteran crisis hotline number. If you or a veteran you know are experiencing a crisis, please dial 988 and press 1. Once again, that is 988 and press 1 when prompted.